whole conference. And he tells me he's enjoyed it too.
Right, so, response.
We're now going to hear from him as he reflects on what we've heard and talked about over the last couple of days. Bishop Peter.
Thank you.
This is, it's always the difficult slot, because in a way, if you prepare in advance, you've missed the moment. So I have been contemplating how to do this session, and there are a number of things I could have done. I could have tried to be clever and draw the threads together from all the conversations that have gone on and the input and all the rest of it and drawn some kind of wonderful tapestry, but I'm not going to do that. Partly because I wanted this space not just to be about my reflections, but more significantly, about your reflections before they go cold. We all know what we have to face when we get on the train to go home, and we all know how quickly the business of next week overtakes what we've been doing over this 48 hours. So I'm going to lead a sort of a Bible study, which is not something I normally do, not because I don't like the Bible, but I kind of don't tend to work in that way. But the story that has been going over and over in my mind, I want to read to you, and then just make one or two reflections, which I hope will draw together some of the threads that we have been engaged with. And it's Luke 9, verses 51 to 56. When the days drew near for Jesus to be taken up, he set his face resolutely to go to Jerusalem. And he sent messengers ahead of him. On their way, they entered a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him. But they did not receive him, because his face was set towards Jerusalem. When his disciples James and John saw it, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" But he turned and rebuked them, and they went on to another village. I have to say, I don't find it difficult to be in the shoes of James and John when they are faced with resistance and opposition in the Samaritan villages. The temptation to get Jesus to rain down fire must have been huge and remains so in many different contexts. And without wanting to embarrass the archdeacon who is with us for this conference, at breakfast time, he was drawing up plans for where fire should consume the pews of his respective parishes. There are days when all of us are tempted to ask for fire to be rained down, whether it's fire to be called down on those very frustrating buildings that we have and we don't know what to do with, whether it's on those recalcitrant clergy and lay leaders who remain corks in the bottle to collaboration and effective lay ministry, those it would be tempting to call down fire. Or whether, as we heard in a very moving way yesterday, whether it's on senior staff, because we have to admit that there are times when we are the blocks and the corks in the bottle. But as we reflect on that text, that is clearly not the way that Jesus chooses to go. He resists that huge temptation. And the key phrase in that text, or the key phrase for me, Jesus resolutely set his face towards Jerusalem. And as we know, Jerusalem is the place both of peace and of conflict. And the road to get there will not be easy. Another phrase I heard just this morning, it feels a bit like a roller coaster. and that's quite a good image. We have, as I think we have all realized, as we have talked with each other and listened to each other, we have to walk together. We have to seek those fluid, flexible spaces of which Bishop Alistair spoke on Friday evening, where conversation can happen about the shape and nature of God's mission to which all of us are committed, where vision and purpose can be explored. But as Oliver reminded us last night, I think quite rightly, we must not underestimate the challenge. But please, 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 if you have discovered your voices over this last 48 hours, don't allow them to become silent when you go back into your deaneries or your dioceses. I do often think that we make the mistake sometimes of believing that the road to the kingdom, I mean, I was fascinated by all those graphs that we had on finance. I'm completely clueless about what they meant, but they're pretty. But what was interesting to me was that very rarely did they go in any kind of clear direction. Very often they were kind of like that. And I quite like that, because I think that's the reality. I think that is the reality. The road to the kingdom is not progressive. It is full of peaks and troughs. There will be moments of disclosure where God breaks in and we see change and we see transformation. I was really heartened by Oliver's examples yesterday of two particular deaneries, Bristol South and that wonderful image of Chippenham's Flame of Hope. You know, those are the moments when disclosure breaks in, and we will all know those moments in our own contexts. But they are only moments. It's a bit like the Transfiguration story. We have to go back down the mountain, and we again have to face the resistance that we will find. That resistance, as I tried to say yesterday, which for me is still contained within our obsession almost with parochialism and clericalism. You know, we have to go on working our way towards breaking that apart. And at those moments, of course, it is very hard to see where the light gets in. But go back to the text. Go back to the text. Jesus set his face towards Jerusalem. Crystal clear leadership. That was a phrase that came out. Consistent leadership. Consistent leadership. Don't keep coming up with new initiatives. Jesus didn't do that. He set his face resolutely towards Jerusalem. And of course, it was a journey that he did not undertake alone. Yes, I accept the disciples didn't always get it, and neither, of course, do we. But it didn't prevent them from walking alongside and making that journey with him. What I have been, I was saying earlier to Martin, I think what I have heard very powerfully over this 48 hours is the voice of lay people. And I'm really hugely grateful for that. So often when I get engaged in these kinds of discussions, they become very clericalized very quickly. And it's been very important to have that balance over this 48 hours, where we have been able to listen to one another and appreciate that all of us have a contribution to make into this debate. We are all here together. And I hope and pray we're all here together because we continue to have a passion for the things of the kingdom. That's why we're here. And if we lose that passion for the kingdom, then, you know, go home. Go and do something else. This has to be an outward-facing task where God touches the margins of our society with love, with energy, with that wonderful phrase that somebody, I think it was Oliver, used again. How do we release energy into the world that God loves so much? That's the reason we want to reshape deaneries, not because we've got nothing else to do, because all of us have got plenty of other things to do. But we reshape in order that God's mission can be more focused. So that is a kind of, well, it's my reflection out of a story that has meant quite a lot to me over the last 3 or 4 weeks, which I've been kind of turning over in my mind. And I hope perhaps for you it might have some resonance. Somebody's ringing. It must be the Archbishop. The new one. One of the great things is that there's been a real kind of engagement over this 48 hours. People are very quick to kind of have a go at archdeacons and bishops. No, it's been great. I just want you to hold that text. Jesus set his face resolutely to Jerusalem. And I'm going to invite you to do two things. And they're very practical things, because I want you to go away with something personal and practical. The first thing I want you to do is to find one thing of hope that you are going to take away from this conference. One thing of hope that you are taking away. The second thing I'd like you to do, as you go back into your deaneries or your dioceses, to recognize one thing of challenge that you're going to have to deal with, that you can't put off any longer. One thing that is a block to the kind of vision and purpose and passion that we've been talking about. There have been an awful lot of words over 48 hours. What I want you to do for 5 minutes in silence is to reflect on that for yourselves. Something of hope, something of challenge that you know you want to take back to your contexts. And then when we've had that time of quiet, to share that with each other around the tables, if you would like to. There may be some things which are too deeply personal that you would prefer not to share, and that's absolutely fine. But there may be other things that it would be helpful to share. And then we'll give kind of a quarter of an hour for that time of sharing. And then so that we can listen to one another, because again, one of the great things about this conference has been the ability to listen to each other. I'm not going to invite you to long, long debates, but I will go around each table just to see whether there is one thing of hope, one thing of challenge, which we can all listen to before we go into the Eucharist. And I hope as you come into the Eucharist later on this morning, you will bring that with you and offer it to God for blessing and for transformation. So we have 5 minutes just for your own personal reflections, and then some time of sharing some of those with each other, and then we'll come back for a plenary in about 20 minutes. Okay, thank you. Don't be tempted to speak. Reluctant to draw the silence to an end. Actually, it feels very powerful in lots of ways, but I promised you some time to talk with each other. So if we give 15 minutes for you to share in your tables those two things, then we'll come back for a plenary in about 15 minutes' time.